It's that time again, everyone. It's Chip and Eric read through the Bible, and the Bible that we're reading is the New Living Translation, and we're reading the New Living Translation with our friends, and Chip is here today. That's the name of our podcast.
Okay.
That's the whole name of the podcast.
That'd be tough to put on a t-shirt, but if anybody can do it, Josh Pugh can do it.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
He's known to put a lot of words on a little thing.
Yeah. He can fit a lot of words on some small stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like Hannah recently had my tombstone made with Josh Pugh.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it is the size of like half of a $1 bill.
Yeah.
And it.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing.
Yeah, he put a lot on
those tombstones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, speaking of all right, Eric, today is day 101.
Darn right it is.
We're going to read 1 Samuel chapter 7, 8, and 9. We're going to jump ahead to the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5, 21 through 43 today.
So, the men of Kiriath-Jearim came to get the Ark of the Lord. They took it to the hillside home of Abinadab and ordained Eleazar, his son, to be in charge of it. The Ark remained in Kiriath-Jearim for a long time, 20 years in all. During that time, all Israel mourned because it seemed the Lord had abandoned them.
Samuel leads Israel to victory. It's on the next page. I didn't see it. Then Samuel said to all the people of Israel, "If you want to return to the Lord with all your hearts, get rid of all your foreign gods and your images of Ashtoreth. Turn your hearts to the Lord and obey him alone. Then he will rescue you from the Philistines." So the Israelites got rid of their images of Baal and Ashtoreth and worshipped only the Lord. Then Samuel told them, "Gather all Israel at Mizpah, and I'll pray to the Lord for you." So they gathered at Mizpah, and in a great ceremony drew water from a well and poured it out before the Lord. They also went without food all day and confessed that they had sinned against the Lord. It was at Mizpah that Samuel became Israel's judge. Hmm. When the Philistine rulers heard that Israel had gathered at Mizpah, they mobilized their army and advanced. The Israelites were badly frightened when they learned that the Philistines were approaching. "Don't stop pleading with the Lord our God to save us from the Philistines," they begged Samuel. So Samuel took a young lamb and offered it to the Lord as a whole burnt offering. He pleaded with the Lord to help Israel, and the Lord answered him. Just as Samuel was sacrificing the burnt offering, the Philistines arrived to attack Israel. But the Lord spoke with a mighty voice of thunder from heaven that day, and the Philistines were thrown into such confusion that the Israelites defeated them. The men of Israel chased them from Mizpah to a place below Beth-Kar, slaughtering them all along the way. Samuel then took a large stone and placed it between the towns of Mizpah and Jeshanah. He named it Ebenezer, which means the stone of help. For he said, "Up to this point, the Lord has helped us." So the Philistines were subdued and didn't invade Israel again for some time. And throughout Samuel's lifetime, the Lord's powerful hand was raised against the Philistines. The Israelite villages near Ekron and Gath that the Philistines had captured were restored to Israel, along with the rest of the territory that the Philistines had taken, and there was peace between Israel and the Amorites in those days. Samuel continued as Israel's judge for the rest of his life. Each year he traveled around, setting up his court first at Bethel, then at Gilgal, and then at Mizpah. He judged the people of Israel at each of these places. Then he would return to his home at Ramah, and he would hear cases there too. And Samuel built an altar to the Lord at Ramah.
Israel requests a king, 1 Samuel chapter 8. As Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons to be judges over Israel. Joel and Abijah, his oldest sons, held court in Beersheba. But they were not like their father, for they were greedy for money. They accepted bribes and perverted justice. Finally, all the elders of Israel met at Ramah to discuss the matter with Samuel. "Look," they told him, "you're old now, and your sons are not like you. Give us a king to judge us like all the other nations have." Samuel was displeased with their request and went to the Lord for guidance. "Do everything they say to you," the Lord replied, "for they are rejecting me, not you. They don't want me to be their king any longer. Ever since I brought them from Egypt, they have continually abandoned me and followed other gods, and now they're giving you the same treatment. Do as they ask, but solemnly warn them about the way a king will reign over them."
Samuel warns against a kingdom. So Samuel passed on the Lord's warning to the people who were asking him for a king. "This is how a king will reign over you," Samuel said. "The king will draft your sons and assign them to his chariots and his charioteers, making them run before his chariots. Some will be generals and captains in his army. Some will be forced to plow in his fields and harvest his crops. And some will make his weapons and chariot equipment. The king will take your daughters from you and force them to cook and bake and make perfumes for him. He will take away the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his own officials. He will take a tenth of your grain and your grape harvest and distribute it among his officers and attendants. And he will take your male and female slaves and demand the finest of your cattle and donkeys for his own use. He will demand a tenth of your flocks, and you will be his slaves. And when that day comes, you will beg for relief from his king, for you are demanding. But then the Lord will not help you. But the people refused to listen to Samuel's warning. Even so, we still want a king, they said. We want to be like the nations around us. Our king will judge us and lead us into battle. So Samuel repeated to the Lord what the people had said. And the Lord replied, do as they say and give them a king. Then Samuel agreed and sent the people home.
Saul meets Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 9. There was a wealthy, influential man named Kish from the tribe of Benjamin. He was the son of Abiel, son of Zeror, son of Becheroth, son of Athiah, and of the tribe of Benjamin. His son Saul was the most handsome man in Israel, head and shoulders taller than anyone else in the land. One day, Kish's donkeys strayed away, and he told Saul, take a servant with you and go look for the donkeys. So Saul took one of the servants and traveled through the hill country of Ephraim, the land of Shalisha, the Shalim area, and the entire land of Benjamin, but they couldn't find the donkeys anywhere. Finally, they entered the region of Zuf, and Saul said to his servant, let's go home. By now, my father will be more worried about us than about the donkeys. But the servant said, I've just thought of something. There is a man of God who lives here in this town. He is held in high honor by all the people because everything he says comes true. Let's go find him. Perhaps he can tell us which way to go. But we don't have anything to offer him, Saul replied. Even our food is gone, and we don't have a thing to give him. Well, the servant said, I have one small piece of silver. We can at least offer it to the man of God and see what happens. In those days, if people wanted a message from God, they would say, let's go and ask the seer, for prophets used to be called seers. All right, Saul agreed, let's try it. So they started into the town where the man of God lived. As they were climbing the hill to the town, they met some young women coming to draw out water. So Saul asked his servant, is the seer here today? Oh, excuse me. So Saul and his servant asked, is the seer here today? Yes, they replied, stay right on this road. He is at the town gates. He has just arrived to take part in a public sacrifice up at the place of worship. Hurry and catch him before he goes up there to eat. The guests won't begin eating until he arrives to bless the food. So the entire town, so they entered the town, wow. And as they passed through the gates, Samuel was coming out toward them to go up to the place of worship. Now the Lord had told Samuel the previous day, about this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. Anoint him to be the leader of my people Israel. He will rescue them from the Philistines, for I have looked down on my people in mercy and have heard their cry. When Samuel saw Saul, the Lord said, that's the man I told you about. He will rule my people. Just then Saul approached Samuel at the gateway and asked, can you please tell me where the seer's house is? I am the seer, Samuel replied. Go up to the place of worship ahead of me. We will eat together, and in the morning I will tell you what you want to know and send you on your way. Oh, and don't worry about those donkeys that were lost 3 days ago, for they have been found, and I am here to tell you that you and your family are the focus of all Israel's hopes. Saul replied, but I'm only from the tribe of Benjamin, the smallest tribe in Israel, and my family is the least important of all the families of that tribe. Why are you talking like this to me? Then Samuel brought Saul and his servant into the hall and placed them at the head of the table, honoring them above 30 special guests. Samuel then instructed the cook to bring Saul the finest cut of meat, the piece that had been set aside for the guest of honor. So the cook brought in the meat and placed it before Saul. Go ahead and eat it, Samuel said. I was saving it for you even before I invited these others. So Saul ate with Samuel that day. When they came down from the place of worship and returned to town, Samuel took Saul up to the roof of the house and prepared a bed for him there. At daybreak the next morning, Samuel called to Saul, get up, it's time you were on your way. So Saul got ready, and he and Samuel left the house together. And when they reached the edge of town, Samuel told Saul to send his servant on ahead. After the servant was gone, Samuel said, stay here, for I have received a special message for you from God.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. Well, thanks, Eric. Okay, we're going to move ahead to Mark chapter 5, starting with verse 21, and read through 43. Jesus heals in response to faith. Jesus got into the boat again and went back to the other side of the lake, where a large crowd gathered around him on the shore. Then a leader of the local synagogue, whose name was Jairus, arrived. When he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet, pleading fervently with him. My little daughter is dying, he said. Please come and lay your hands on her. Heal her so she can live. Jesus went with him, and all the people followed, crowding around him. A woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding. She had suffered a great deal from many doctors, and over the years she had spent everything she had to pay them, but she had gotten no better. In fact, she had gotten worse. She had heard about Jesus, so she came up behind him through the crowd and touched his robe. For she thought to herself, if I can just touch his robe, I will be healed. Immediately the bleeding stopped, and she could feel in her body that she had been healed of her terrible condition. Jesus realized at once that healing power had gone out from him. So he turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my robe?" His disciples said to him, "Look at this crowd pressing around you. How can you ask, who touched me? But he kept on looking around to see who had done it. Then the frightened woman, trembling at the realization what had happened to her, came and fell to her knees in front of him and told him what she had done. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your suffering is over." While he was still speaking to her, messengers arrived from the home of Jairus, the leader of the synagogue. They told him, "Your daughter is dead. There's no use troubling the teacher now." But Jesus overheard them and said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid, just have faith." Then Jesus stopped the crowd and wouldn't let anyone go with him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw much commotion and weeping and wailing. He went inside and asked, "Why all this commotion and weeping? The child isn't dead. She's only asleep." The crowd laughed at him, but he made them all leave, and he took the girl's father and mother and three disciples into the room where the girl was lying. Holding her hand, he said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, get up." And the girl, which was 12 years old, immediately stood up and walked around. They were overwhelmed and totally amazed. Jesus gave them strict orders not to tell anyone what had happened, and then he told them to give her something to eat.
And that is our reading today. Okay, well, that was a bit of a struggle for me, but that's okay. I struggled with two questions in mind, Chip.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why didn't I learn to read?
One.
Yep.
Two.
And how do you pronounce half of these words? But anyway, the real questions are, how does this help me love God more? How does this help me love others more? So, Chip, how does this help you love God more?
Yeah. Well, I love the Jesus story and the Jairus and the woman touching him and healing and the faith that's involved there. That's awesome.
Yep.
I love that. And just the compassion of Jesus and how he cares and is concerned for people, wants to heal people, help people. But I'll go back to Samuel reading. I love how God lets us get our way to teach us what we need to learn his way.
Yep.
So God lets us get our way
so
we can learn the hard way to learn his way, which is the true way, the right way.
Yep. Yep.
I learned many lessons that way. Thankful for God's mercy and grace and discipline in my life. And that's what he did with them, right? With the king.
Yeah.
He wanted to be their king. He's the best king.
Yeah.
But, you know, they want to be like other people and other nations. So he says, go ahead. Just tell them what to expect. So that's what God does. He lays it out. Here's what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
But
I just love the idiotic realization that they're like, man, we keep getting conquered. We need a king,
yeah,
you know? Like,
sure.
And I get Samuel's sons were terrible or whatever, but like, I don't know. Whatever. You guys know what I'm saying. It's just crazy.
Yes,
okay,
know.
So how can this help me love others more?
Yeah.
This helps me love others more because of the importance of telling each other the truth. Sometimes in warnings, like what you said.
Sure, yeah.
But also sometimes in encouragement, like what Jesus does. Don't be afraid. Just have faith, right? And in both stories, we've got Samuel standing up and saying, don't you realize what a king will do? And he tells them all this true stuff, right? And we will see those things happen as this whole kingdom thing plays out. And then there's a civil war and then really, really bad kings who do all of the things that he said and much, much worse.
Yeah.
But Samuel stands in front of all of them and he loves them. And we, you know, later when Samuel's preparing to die and he says, you know, I've never done anything wrong to you. And they all agree to that. He loves them. And he wants them to know, hey, you are rejecting the best thing that you have, and that's God, right? And so he loves them enough to speak the truth to them in a way that warns them. And Jesus loves Jairus enough to speak the truth to him in a way that comforts and encourages him. And it's the situation that determines whether we, you know, warn someone, caution someone, rebuke someone, or encourage and comfort them. But I think that the takeaway here is the things that we say to each other really matter. Mm-hmm. And that we should love each other enough to tell each other the truth, whether it's a warning or a word of comfort.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Tell the truth.
Tell the truth.
Speak it in love.
Speak it in love. Okay. That's a great way to say it. Hmm. Did you make that up?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. All right.
No way. No way.
Yeah, we all knew.
Yep. You know. You know because you guys read the Bible. You know the Bible.
Chip, there's a challenge.
What is the challenge, Eric?
There's a challenge to read the Bible every single day.
Yep.
You can go on Facebook, and there's a calendar that you can get and
download
and mark your calendar. It's honor system.
Okay.
There is, if you win the prize, there is a lie detector test.
Okay.
Not one of the fancy, like, polygraph tests.
Oh, no.
No, yeah, no. We just throw you in a river, and if you float, then you lied.
Yeah.
And if you sink and drown, then you told the truth. And,
yeah.
And so you'll get the prize.
Yeah, we're working on the river location at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, there are pretty much no rivers left.
Yeah, yeah. So we're trying to figure that out. So,
yeah, it's okay, though.
Yep, it's okay. You're okay. We're proud of you. Way to go. And we will read to you soon.